Hey everyone, welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, as law students, time is always of the essence, right? You need to understand key legal cases, and you need to do it quickly. So today, we're going deep on a fascinating 11th Circuit case. United States v. Antunchala, decided back in 2014.
Yeah, this case is really interesting. It shows how what seems like a simple immigration fraud case can actually raise some pretty complex legal issues. Basically, it involves three brothers who set up these sham marriages so they get green cards and eventually become U.S. citizens. But the case goes way beyond just immigration fraud. We're talking about conspiracy law, what exactly it means to unlawfully obtain citizenship, and even some important stuff about how trials work.
Okay, so we've all heard those stories about sham marriages for green cards, right? But you're saying this Chawla case has some deeper lessons that are actually important for us as we're studying law. What exactly are we hoping to get out of this deep dive today?
Our mission today is to break down the key legal arguments in Chawla and figure out what it all means for immigration law. This case is especially helpful for understanding how courts deal with complicated fraud schemes that happen over many years. It also shows how courts view the whole immigration process, how all the different parts are connected, and how they handle cases where several people work together to commit fraud.
All right, so let's start with the basics. Who are these Chawla brothers, and what exactly did they do that got them in trouble with the law?
Well, there were three brothers, Moafak, Antone, and Fadi. They were originally from Syria and came up with this plan to arrange these fake marriages with U.S. citizens to get their green cards, you know, the lawful permanent resident status. Like, take Moafak. He paid a woman named Victoria Knight to marry him. They never planned to actually live together as husband and wife, and as soon as he had his green card, they got divorced.
Okay, so a classic green card marriage scheme. But what about the other brothers? Did they follow a similar playbook?
Oh yeah, Antone and Fadi did basically the same thing. They went all out, even creating fake leases and taking staged photos to show immigration officials. They really wanted to make it look like they were in real marriages.
Wow, they put a lot of work into making it believable. So how did their plan finally unravel? What happened that brought them into the courtroom?
Well, it all started to fall apart when Brenda Pettit, who was married to Fadi as part of this whole scheme, decided to cooperate with the FBI.
Oh, so she flipped on them.
Exactly. And her cooperation turned out to be crucial. She recorded several conversations with the brothers, you know, phone calls and stuff, where they talked about their fraudulent intentions. This was some pretty strong evidence.
That's a classic way these schemes get exposed. Someone involved gets cold feet or maybe feels guilty and decides to turn on the others. So the brothers were charged, convicted, and then they appealed their case to the 11th Circuit, right? What were their main arguments in trying to get their convictions overturned?
Right. The jury found them guilty of both conspiracy and unlawful procurement of citizenship. So they appealed on several grounds. First, they claimed the evidence presented during the trial wasn't enough to prove they were guilty. Then, they said the instructions the judge gave to the jury were wrong, legally speaking. And finally, they even challenged the judge's decision to deny their motion for a mistrial, which they, based on what they said, was contradictory testimony from a government witness.
Okay, so they tried to poke holes in the prosecution's case from different angles. Let's break down each of those legal arguments. First up, they argued that there wasn't just one big conspiracy, but actually several smaller ones, right? Why did the defense make that argument, and why didn't the 11th Circuit buy it?
Yeah, so this is a really important concept in conspiracy law. The brothers argued that each sham marriage was basically its own separate agreement, its own conspiracy. They wanted the court to see it as three distinct conspiracies, one for each brother. But the 11th Circuit disagreed and upheld the jury's finding of a single overarching conspiracy.
I see. So instead of three small conspiracies, it was one big conspiracy that they were all a part of. Why did the court come to that conclusion?
Because the brothers shared a common goal, an illegal one, to commit immigration fraud and ultimately get those green cards and then citizenship. Plus, there was clear coordination between them, especially with Moafak. He was kind of the mastermind, the facilitator for all these sham marriages.
So they were working as a team, even though each brother had a separate marriage.
Exactly. And the court emphasized that. You know, the jury instructions correctly presented this as a question for the jury to decide based on the evidence they saw and heard. So even though the brothers might have tried to distance themselves from each other, the court saw through it.
That's a pretty interesting point. Even though they were involved in separate marriages, the shared goal and that coordination, especially with Moafak leading the charge, tied it all together as one big conspiracy. All right, let's move on to the second big legal issue in this case, what's called the unlawful procurement of citizenship. That's covered under 18 U.S.C. Section 1425A. What was the brothers' argument on this point, and how did the court respond?
This is where we really see how immigration fraud can have long-term consequences. The brothers essentially argued that even if they did commit fraud to get their initial green cards, that didn't automatically mean their later naturalization as citizens was invalid.
So they were trying to say that those were two separate things, almost like what they tried to argue with the multiple conspiracies.
Right. They tried to say those were distinct parts of the immigration process, but the 11th Circuit wasn't having any of it. They relied heavily on a Supreme Court case called Fedorenko v. United States. This case set a really important precedent. You have to strictly comply with all the requirements Congress set up for becoming a citizen. If you lie or commit fraud to get an earlier immigration benefit, like a green card, your eventual citizenship can be revoked. It's considered illegally procured.
So it's like the whole process is tainted.
Exactly. The court basically said the immigration process is like a chain. If one link is weak or broken, the whole thing falls apart. If there was fraud in getting the green card, which is a necessary step to becoming a citizen, the entire process is messed up.
So even if they were completely truthful on their citizenship applications, because that initial green card was obtained fraudulently, everything that followed is considered invalid.
That's the gist of it. The court in Chawla emphasized that getting that fraudulent green card was a key part of their plan to eventually become citizens. They pointed to the fact that there wasn't much time between when the brothers got their green cards and when they applied for citizenship. In some cases, it was only 3 years. The court saw that as more evidence that their plan all along was to use those fake green cards to become citizens.
Right. It's like the court is saying, come on, you didn't just suddenly decide to be honest and follow all the rules. This was your plan all along.
Precisely. The court saw their entire path to citizenship is built on lies. And since their green cards were obtained through fraud, that necessary step towards citizenship was tainted from the start. This case really shows that following all the immigration laws and procedures at every step is absolutely crucial.
This is a huge takeaway for anyone dealing with immigration law. Even unintentional misrepresentations can have serious consequences down the line. Now, let's move on to those procedural arguments they made in their appeal. They claimed the jury instructions were flawed. What specifically were they unhappy about, and why didn't the 11th Circuit agree with them?
So the defense wanted the judge to give the jury two specific instructions, which he refused to do. First, they wanted an instruction on multiple conspiracies. This would have basically asked the jury to consider their argument that there were three separate agreements, not one big conspiracy. Second, they asked for an instruction on a good faith defense. This basically means they were suggesting that maybe, just maybe, the brothers actually believed their marriages were legitimate.
So they were trying to introduce some doubt, saying maybe the brothers didn't actually intend to break the law.
Right. But the 11th Circuit upheld the judge's decision to not give these instructions. They said there simply wasn't enough evidence presented at trial to support either of those ideas. For example, nothing suggested the brothers actually thought their marriages were real or that they were trying to build genuine relationships with their spouses.
So it comes down to the evidence, or lack thereof.
Exactly. The appeals court basically said, look, you can't just throw out these arguments without any basis. The instructions given to the jury have to be based on what was actually presented during the trial.
That makes sense. You can't just make up arguments out of thin air. And the last part of their appeal had to do with a motion for a mistrial. They claimed a government witness gave conflicting testimony. What was their argument there, and why was it rejected?
Yeah, so they argued that the prosecution acted in bad faith by calling a witness whose testimony in court was different from what she had said before. They said this inconsistency was big enough to justify a mistrial. But the 11th Circuit gave a lot of deference to the judge's original decision and ultimately didn't find any abuse of discretion.
Okay, so what does that mean in plain English?
Basically, the appeals court said there was no proof that the prosecution intentionally used false testimony. It actually looked like they called the witness specifically to point out her inconsistencies, which is allowed and a pretty common trial strategy. To win a mistrial argument like that, the defense had to show the prosecution did something wrong on purpose, acted in bad faith, and they just didn't have enough evidence for that.
So in the end, the 11th Circuit upheld the convictions, basically saying none of the brothers' arguments held water. Taking a step back, why is this Chawla case so important for understanding immigration law?
This case is like a big warning sign about how immigration fraud, no matter when it happens, can come back to haunt you. It shows that the government can and will go after people who lie to get immigration benefits, even years later when they try to become citizens. For prosecutors, it's a clear legal precedent that lets them link fraudulent actions early on, like getting a green card illegally, to that charge of unlawfully procuring citizenship. And for defense attorneys, it shows how hard it is to argue there were multiple conspiracies when there's evidence people worked together to commit a crime. It also highlights the high bar to prove prosecutorial misconduct to get a mistrial.
So this case has big implications for both sides of the courtroom.
Absolutely. And for law students, what are the biggest takeaways from our deep dive into United States v. Antoon Chawla?
Well, I'd say understanding that single conspiracy doctrine is crucial. Even if actions seem separate, if there's a shared criminal goal and people are coordinating, it can be considered one big conspiracy. Like in this case, how the brothers relied on each other to get their immigration goals was key. And of course, understanding how far-reaching 18 U.S.C. Section 1425A is. Basically, any fraud in the immigration process, even way back when you first applied for a green card, can make your citizenship invalid later on. Remember that Fedorenko case and how important it is to follow all the rules every step of the way.
Right, and don't forget how the court viewed that short time frame between getting the green card and applying for citizenship. That was seen as evidence of their initial fraudulent intent.
Right, and lastly, understanding how difficult it is to overturn convictions. Courts generally don't like to mess with jury verdicts or grant mistrials unless there are really strong legal errors or obvious misconduct by the prosecution. The defense in Chawla didn't have enough evidence to support their arguments about multiple conspiracies or good faith, and they couldn't prove bad faith by the prosecution for a mistrial. Those are important lessons for anyone going into law.
Definitely. This case really highlights the serious consequences of immigration fraud and how far the law can reach. It also leaves us with a final thought to ponder. What about those people who might have accidentally given false information earlier in the immigration process, maybe even years before applying for citizenship?
Yeah.
What are the ethical and legal issues when their initial intention wasn't necessarily to commit fraud, but those actions could still put their immigration status at risk? That's something to really think about as you continue your legal studies.
Some food for thought, for sure. It's a great reminder that even seemingly small mistakes can have big consequences down the line. Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time on the Deep Dive, keep exploring, keep learning.